From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, are we being mind programmed? Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Facebook crimes ranging from scams to online bullying are way on the rise, and they are getting more sophisticated. According to experts, it's no secret that scammers on the social media website rely on carefully crafted bails that often include scandalous and explicit video content or exclusive footage of the latest and hottest events, from celebrity death claims to never-before-seen footage of a natural disaster. Lauren Weinstein with us. Been involved in the development of the internet for decades. This is getting to be a bad situation, Lauren, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's usually a matter of making sure that people use a certain degree of common sense, because if you're gullible, it doesn't make much difference whether you're gullible on Facebook or on some other sites. You can get yourself into a lot of trouble. Often, if something looks too enticing or too good, it's going to be a phony. But I have to say that all else being considered here, Facebook doesn't do all that much to help, because their privacy settings are so confusing and they change them on such a crazy basis that they have the unfortunate side effect of causing people sometimes to overshare their information. And if you overshare, if you let people that you didn't really want to have certain aspects of your information have access to it, that makes you more of a target, more of a patsy. So Facebook is part of the problem. And in contrast to some of the other sites, Google Plus, for example, has done a much better job with their privacy settings, because it allows you to restrict who you're sharing information with much more easily. So you have to be careful, but it's also the jobs of these sites to provide the right tools.
And another thing, people are putting way too much personal information on their own sites, aren't they?
I think people sometimes put on more information than they have to, but I think part of the reason they do that is sometimes they think, often inaccurately, that they're only sharing it with a select group of people. And they assume that if they're only talking to their friends, for example, that this kind of information is okay, not realizing that if in actuality they're sharing it with a much broader group or even with the public, that introduces a whole different set of possible risks.
Do you think their own personal group of people want to know what they ate for lunch?
Well, yeah. There are some people who are really, really into that. It can get rather narcissistic, of course, but I mean, that's people's choices. If they want to share their menus, that's okay. I think the important thing is that people understand who they're sharing with, whether they're sharing their phone number or their social security number or a bologna sandwich.
Good point. Lauren, thank you so much. Is it the sign of the beast, a hair-thin electronic patch that adheres to the skin like a temporary tattoo, could transform medical sensing, computer gaming, spy operations, according to a U.S. study? The microelectronics technology, which is called EES, was developed by an international team of researchers from the United States, China, and Singapore, and is described in the journal Science. The patch could be used instead of bulky electrodes to monitor brain, heart, muscle, tissue activity, and when placed on the throat, it allows users to operate a voice-activated video game with better than 90% accuracy. So stand by. Who knows what they're going to use that thing for? Well, the investment roller coaster continues with the stock market. U.S. and European shares have risen today, but trading remains volatile as concerns continue over euro debt. Wall Street's main Dow Jones index up almost 4%, helped by data showing a fall in the number of unemployment claimants. The financially strapped Postal Service is considering cutting as many as 120,000 jobs, facing a second-year loss totaling $8 billion or more. They also want to pull its workers out of the retirement and health benefits plan covering federal workers and set up their own benefit system as well. Congress needs to approve this. The post office has already cut 110,000 jobs. An unmanned hypersonic glider developed for U.S. defense research into super-fast global strike capabilities was launched atop a rocket early Thursday, but contact was lost after the experimental craft began flying on its own. The problem occurred during the critical point of transition to the flight, more than 9 minutes of data collected before they lost the signal. Robert Zimmerman with us. What do you think about this one, Bob?
I'm kind of puzzled by this program, George. They're testing what appears to be gliding technology coming back from suborbital or even almost orbital elevation, a little less than orbit. And they seem to be testing how to do that gliding. But this is not new technology. The shuttle did it more than 100 times. We've also tested other kinds of lifting body technologies from orbit. I'm a little puzzled why they are doing these tests. And furthermore, I'm even more puzzled why they haven't been as successful as I think they should be. They've done this twice, both times during the glide phase of the hypersonic plane. They lost contact sooner than expected. Something went wrong with the ability of this unmanned craft to glide, and its computers basically told it to take a dive into the ocean.
Looks like
now,
it.
They're testing, they're developing this because the military wants a method of delivering bombs, essentially, very fast across the intercontinental distances, and be able to maneuver so you can't track it like a missile. And that's why they're developing this. But I don't quite understand why they have to even do these tests. I'm wondering if it's almost a boondoggle, George, and we're spending money for the guys in the military are just having fun playing with toys.
Well, it could be. The thing goes 13,000 miles an hour. Looks like a huge arrowhead, Bob. I'm wondering if some people have seen this object and thought it was a UFO.
Well, it's only flown twice, and both times they have flown it over the oceans, far away from everything. There's another aspect to this. I wonder if it has powered flight during the glide phase. They've been very, very vague about what it does. The reports imply it's gliding, but I wonder about that. I just don't know. There's a lot of unknowns about this thing. The biggest question in my mind is why they've had the tests have not been completed. What's gone wrong? And once again, this is not new technology. It should actually be pretty straightforward to build a lifting body that can come back from orbital speeds. These kind of speeds are not much slower than the shuttle. So I'm puzzled by this.
So where is it? It's crashed in the ocean?
Yeah, and this was exactly. That was actually the plan all along. Remember, they're developing this thing to deliver bombs. So in the end, it's going to crash where it goes, wherever it's being aimed. But maneuver to that position rather than an intercontinental missile.
Okay.
And in this case, it was supposed to go into the ocean. It just went into the ocean much sooner than expected.
You got it. All right. Thanks, Bob Zimmerman. Women who start smoking increase their risk of heart attacks by more than men who take up that same habit, according to a review of more than 30 years of research. A study of 2.4 million people showed a 25% difference in increased risk. The United States has recorded its very first death from a vampire bat bite. A young Mexican migrant showed up to work at a Louisiana sugarcane plantation. He worked one day, complained of fatigue, shoulder pain, and numbness. By August 3rd, he'd been sent to a hospital. An investigation later discovered he had been bitten on the heel of his foot. On July 15th, while sleeping back in Mexico, the bat transmitted rabies to him. By the time they figured out what happened to him, he had died. This summer, as I reported yesterday, was an amazing time for UFO sightings with reports from all over the world. And here's Peter Davenport from the new UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do we have out there?
Boy, I've never seen anything like this, George, and thank you very much for making time available on short notice
Sure.
to cover this issue. You're exactly correct. For the last several months, I've been trying to bring to the attention of the American people the fact that something appears to be going on, certainly from my vantage point, and I don't understand it. In fact, I'm not sure I ever understand what I'm dealing with, but for the last 2 months, and in fact it goes back really as far as 14 months ago, I started receiving reports of red, orange, and yellow fireballs, anywhere from 2 to 50 of them, and it's just soared dramatically. I'm sitting here looking at the reports that have come in just tonight. I'm looking already at 11 reports from across the United States, Virginia Beach, Binghamton, New York, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Missouri, you name it, we're getting reports from there, and it's really unnerving.
That is interesting. Now, you've supplied us with some audio. Tell us a little bit about this before we play it, Peter.
Boy, this is a fascinating audio, George, and I'm delighted to be able to bring it to our audience tonight. On the 1st of August, Monday, I received a call from a very interesting, sober-minded gentleman who said that on Saturday night, the 30th of July, he was just going outside to walk his dogs. His wife and daughter were about to follow him out of the house. They were locking up. And he saw a red fireball streak across the sky, and it just completely shocked him. He describes himself as an amateur astronomer. He's a very successful businessman. He's a very successful musician. He's a good witness, a solid witness. He was so shocked, he yelled to his wife and daughter to come outside, 14-year-old daughter, very bright young gal, and they came out. The object had gone by that time. But lo and behold, here comes a second one. This time he was ready for it. He shone his 15 million candle power spot lamp at the object. And why don't we just play the audio and the audience can hear what that object did after he shone his light on it.
I'm actually calling to report a sighting that occurred last evening at 9 p.m. It was a sighting that was significant. It was witnessed by three people. It has photographic evidence, and there was even interaction with the object. And to just give you a brief overview, it was I was out walking the dogs at 9 p.m. I witnessed two glowing, brilliantly glowing, orange-red orbs that were moving from north to south, about 1,000 to 2,000 feet high. I was able to get photographs of them, but I guess more importantly, on the second orb that passed over, the first one passed over and disappeared. The second one that passed over, I had a 15 million candle power spotlight that I shined, hit it with four or five bursts of the light directed right at it, and the brilliant red light stopped. It turned off. And then I shined it, and I was able to illuminate the underside of an object that was dull silver, dull gray, and it was spinning. And I followed this whole thing, took place for maybe about 2 minutes, and I do have some photos. I will visit your hotline and file an online report.
What an incredible story. Peter Davenport, by the way, runs the UFOCenter.com, the National UFO Reporting Center, UFOCenter.com. He finances all these stories by himself. So if you can send 25 cents, a dollar to him, he'll appreciate it. And you can get that information on his website, UFOCenter.com. Feeling tense lately? You're not alone. We'll find out why in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you might be acting strange, tense. You're not alone. Dr. Judith Orloff, a medical intuitive, UCLA psychiatrist. And Judith has a private practice here in Los Angeles. Her book, Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life, back on Coast to Coast. Judith, they are. People are tense. Why? What's going on?
Oh, George, our world is in the midst of an emotional meltdown. Now, as a psychiatrist and an intuitive, I have never seen so much depression, anxiety, fear that is everywhere. I've never seen it. There's an epidemic of exhaustion, and people are tense all over.
I am seeing people lose their cool on the road, road rage, in the parking lot of a post office, in a supermarket. Like you say, I've never seen anything like this before.
There has been so much road rage. In Emotional Freedom, I talk about the world being on the edge of an emotional meltdown, and how do you deal with it? How do you keep your cool in the center of all of this fear? And these are the tools that we have to learn, because road rage is everywhere. There's road rage, there's desk rage, there's supermarket rage. I saw a woman who got so angry that someone cut in front of her, she took out a can of whipped cream and sprayed it on the person.
I witnessed in the supermarket, you know how most of these supermarkets now are going to four self-help cash register systems, right? And they've got one person sitting there at the front in a little desk monitoring these four little computer systems where people go through, swipe their own stuff, put the money in, their credit cards, and they're gone. Well, I guess they're divided into two lanes of two over on the left, two on the right. And a lot of times when people wait in line, Judith, for the four people to get done so they can move ahead, you wait in the middle, and that's where the line forms. So The first person who finishes one of four, the person in line goes there. Well, apparently, some guy decided to create his own line behind one of the other two cash computers, and the person who was second or first, yeah, the guy who was second did that. The person who was first went ballistic and said, "You're out of line. I'm next." And he said, "Well, if you're next, you get over on this side of the line." And it was unbelievable, but I've never seen that before.
Oh, they can, you know, practically get violent in the supermarket lines. But that's the point in emotional freedom. What do we do in these situations? You know, let's say the line. I have an exercise in the book in what to do in a frustrating line, because I think that is an amazing opportunity to practice being a different kind of person. I mean, if we just deal with our reptilian brain, what's going to happen is someone's going to cut in front of us and we're going to want to kill them. We're going to have so much anger that comes up because it encroaches on personal boundaries. And it's a basic instinct, and people are so on edge anyways that it just takes one little thing and then it throws them off into a rage attack. But what I'm suggesting is that when you go stand in the longest, most irritating line you could find, but do it in such a way where you're calm, you're cheerful, you're trying to be positive, and you let people in front of you. This is shocking to people because they're expecting a fight. And if you give them the space and if you allow them in front of you, it's like you handed them $1 million. They're so not expecting that. What they're expecting is anger and rage and a fight. And you do not want to give it to them. I know the base level of anger is natural. You don't want someone to cut in front of you on the freeway, in a line, anywhere. You don't. It pisses you off. However, we have to learn as a human race how to do this differently. We can't just react. Emotional freedom means having a choice about how you react and not just reacting when your buttons get pushed.
If you control your own emotions, what do you do to the person who might have gotten you upset? Does that calm them down too?
Totally. It doesn't give them any juice. I mean, as we've talked about before, you know, emotional vampires, energy vampires, these people suck you dry. And if you don't give these people juice, they're not going to get angry at you. They're not going to treat you as a victim. They're going to be very surprised because you're not giving them anything to go on. And that's the key, is to own the moment. If you see someone cut in line, if you see someone who's about to rage at you, if you, whatever you see, you take a breath, you center yourself, you say, okay, how can I come from a different place? And then you take charge of that situation. It's a true form of empowerment as opposed to just reacting. That's a form of weakness as far as I'm concerned.
What's going on the planet that gets everybody so upset these days? Is it the economy, the wars, what the uncertainty? What's doing it?
It's the economy, it's the wars, it's the uncertainty, it's the fear that's everywhere, it's the, you know, the lack of discernment among our leadership. You know, it just drives people crazy. And what I've seen also, and what I write about in emotional freedom, is something called intuitive empathy, emotional empathy, where people are sponges. There are a lot of people who are extremely sensitive, like myself. I'm a medical intuitive, but I'm also an empath. And what that means is I sponge up the stress of the world into my own body, so I can get very anxious or exhausted or depressed if I allow that to happen. And a lot of people don't have the tools on how to deal with this, so they take on the stress of the world into their own bodies. So what I see as a psychiatrist is that people are exhausted much more than usual. They can become very anxious, very depressed, because they're absorbing it. And so people have to learn how not to absorb the negative energy of the world. And, you know, one quick tip is don't look at the 11 o'clock news. If you go to sleep at 11, don't look at anything violent before you go to sleep, so that you can have a restful sleep, because so many of my patients are having insomnia. They're up worrying about finances. They're worrying about the safety of their children. They're worrying about, you know, if their homes are going to be foreclosed.
Oh, and these are all real concerns, Judith.
Of course they are. They are real and they are terrifying. However, we have to learn the tools and how to deal with fear and how to deal with, you know, horrible adversity. I mean, I'm a psychiatrist, but I also see a spiritual element to living. And I believe that everything that comes to us is an emotional challenge and a spiritual challenge so that we can grow stronger and better. And I'm not saying the things that we're facing aren't difficult. These are heart-wrenching. They are just devastating issues in our world today.
They sure are. Judith, hang with us. We're going to come back. We're going to take some phone calls with you and also stories on why people are so tense. Maybe you've witnessed something, too. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, subliminal messages, mind programming, a special report coming up on Coast to Coast in just a moment. And when we come right back, we'll take your phone calls and continue talking about why people are feeling so tense these days. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Judith, is this one of the reasons, too, this tenseness that people overdo it on their weekends or whenever? I mean, they're so tense during their work week that when their weekend hits, whatever day it may fall on for them, they just go out and blitz and they get out of control. Is that one of the reasons?
Yes, it is. What I've seen with a number of my patients and people I've worked with is that they tend to self-medicate all the anxiety and the stress with alcohol and drugs. And so what that happens is that, you know, they go out on a binge over the weekend and they try to just obliterate their mind so they don't think about anything or worry. And what happens is that depletes their neurochemicals. So by the time Monday rolls around and they go back to work, they're depressed and they're burnt out. And then that cycle continues. So it just creates a downward cycle for people because they don't know the techniques to bring their biochemicals back up. For instance, exercising or meditation or being out in nature, doing something really beautiful for yourself, and learning to quiet your mind in a different way other than drugs or alcohol. Most people don't know that, but it's the opposite of emotional freedom, you know, if you, you know, get into the addictive cycle of drugs and alcohol. But, you know, what I've also seen is that people are addicted to anxiety.
Oh, sure. And people tend to eat more when they're depressed, don't they?
Oh, they do. They eat more. They put on weight. Then they have all kinds of health problems, such as hypertension and, you know, many, many health problems. So it's a vicious cycle. And also, you know, what we were talking about before, being an emotional empath, is what happens is that people tend to put on weight to guard against negative energy, because when you have more mass in your body and you're fatter, you're less likely to absorb the negative energy as much. So you know, that's the way many faith healers, you know, protect themselves when they do laying on of hands healing, is they say, and I've had arguments with them that know about this, that they say they need to have the extra weight in order not to take on the stress of, you know, their clients. You know, and I strongly feel, and I've written about this extensively in Positive Energy and Emotional Freedom, that you don't have to put on a lot of weight in order to do the healing work, in order to stay centered. You just have to learn how not to take on negative energy. And people don't have that basic skill. And it's heresy in traditional medicine to talk about subtle energy, biofields, you know, and all of that, because they don't believe in it. And so diagnostically, it's not an option even to say, you're an emotional empath, you're taking on the energy of others. What can you learn to not do that? You see, traditional medicine doesn't even believe in subtle energy fields, so they can't even offer the proper options. What happens is people are exhausted. They get sent to psychiatrists like me to put them on Prozac, which is not the right treatment.
That's not the right treatment either. Let's take some calls here. They're lining up for you. Questions or stories with Dr. Judith Orloff. Let's go to Peter in Pleasant Hill, California. Get us started here, Peter. Go ahead.
Hey, George, a long-time listener, and I've called so many times, I should probably be a guest on your show. about 6 o'clock, I was meeting a friend for coffee, and I was on my bicycle, and I was going through an intersection in the crosswalk on a green light, and this lady who was making a right turn, like I've seen so many people do, looking to the left, watching their vehicle traffic, hits me while I'm on my bike.
Oh. Well, obviously you're okay.
Yeah, I am. Thank God, you know, I wasn't hurt. I was able to catch myself and not, you know, land on my back or my head or anything. But the thing is that she was extremely indignant and kept trying to justify herself by mitigating her culpability and the whole, you know, during the whole thing. I mean, she wouldn't share her information with me like she's supposed to, so I had to get a police report so that way I can get her information and report it to her insurance company. And, you know, I was even told by the clerk at the police station that the case is being reviewed by traffic division on whether or not she should be cited. I mean, she struck me on my bike in a crosswalk, and they didn't even sight her at the scene.
She at least stayed. She didn't escape, right?
No, she didn't stay. She stayed and at least had the decency to, you know, wait, you know, for you know, to make a report. But, you know, and the whole time, though, she kept trying to justify herself by mitigating her culpability. And I wanted to ask your guest, you know, two things. I noticed, George, what you talk about with people really just being stressed out and having little regard for others and having very little responsibility for their own actions. But I wanted to ask your guest, since she is a sensitive, is it, you know, sometimes I have, you know, I expect things to happen. And sometimes in the negative, like I think of like, wow, if this happens, how am I going to react to that? And I'll take my answer off the air after I ask my question. But should I adjust my thinking so that way I don't have a self-fulfilling prophecy? I don't create things that happen?
Well, I think that's an excellent point because, you know, I work as a medical intuitive. I'm also a psychiatrist. And so what I believe in very strongly is that we attract a lot of times what happens to us. And if our minds are going very negative, that we create that ball of negative energy, and that attracts, you know, a lot of fear and anxiety and worry. But if you're more centered in yourself and you're more thinking, I'm going to have a healthy, fun time on this bicycle, you know, and creating that force field around yourself, I think it will do you a lot of good. I really do. I think, and it'll be fun for you to create some positive energy with your thoughts.
Does this affect children, too, what's going on the planet today?
Oh, it affects children so profoundly. You know, when you look at the whole, you know, epidemic of, quote, hyperactive children, you know, what's happening? I mean, in my experience, so many of these children are empathic children. And so they're picking up all this energy and all the stress, the reality of it, but they're being medicated for it. They're not being taught tools how, you know, to calm themselves down and how to deal with it and given the vocabulary of how to deal with it. And so children are being misdiagnosed left and right, you know, and they're really empaths and they're being, you know, given psychiatric diagnosis, which I think is a travesty.
Let's go to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Julie's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Julie.
Hi, great talking with you.
You too.
I think I should have my own show too with you.
Well, good.
Anyway, I agree 120% with your guest. And a good illustration of that, a couple of weeks ago, my husband and I were in a car. I was driving, and we had stopped at an intersection, and there was a guy about early 60s on a motorcycle across the street in the other part of the street. And I had the right-of-way to make a right-hand turn, but I thought I'd be nice, and I waved him to go ahead of me. Well, instead of being happy, he started cursing and yelling at me, and I looked at my husband. I said, that's a perfect illustration of no good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, that's so true. Sadly, that happens all over the place. No, but I feel very strongly it's up to us to shift that energy there. I mean, yes, no, you know, he was wrong and you know, not, and he was a miserable person. But, you know, you have to kind of turn it around in not making it worse because we fan the flames of these kinds of things. You know, throw him kisses or something.
When did you start seeing this, Judith? I've seen it maybe over the last couple of years. How about you?
I've seen it since 2009 when we had the economic crash, the first one. And it's been getting worse and worse and worse, you know, in terms of what's been happening with the economy and the stress that people have been going through, you know, not having enough money to live or send their kids to school. I mean, this has created so much stress, and with the stress of terrorism also. Terrorism combined with the economy creates so much fear energy around the whole planet. But it's interesting, as I traveled to Canada at one point, I experienced Canada as having much less fear. I mean, I literally crossed the border, and I felt a change in energy of the fear level.
But look what's happening worldwide. Look what just happened in England. Look what's been going on in the Middle East. And those areas aren't by themselves. It's happening in the Philippines and other regions of this planet as well. This is a planetary-wide thing. This isn't just restricted to the United States.
No, it's planetary-wide. The rage is rampant. And, you know, this, it feels very connected to me in terms of what we're doing to the Earth, you know, in terms of the destruction of the Earth and the nature going out of balance. I think that also is has to do with this, in that we can't get away with destroying the earth and the arrogance and you know, the lack of accountability with that, not expect things to change in our bodies, too. You know, in terms of the rage, I mean, the earth has, I believe the earth is a living being creature, you know, gorgeous, you know, energy, you know, that has its own reactions, and our bodies respond, too. So it's life out of balance. And so more than ever, we have to find that balance in ourselves, and I believe we can. I mean, I believe that human beings can. I mean, that's why I wrote Emotional Freedom. How do you deal with all of this and still, you know, keep your center? How do you stay in the moment and not catastrophize, you know, a million horrible things? You know, like your caller said, how do I begin to generate positive thoughts, you know, even in the midst of adversity? It's asking a lot of us, but I believe this is a spiritual challenge.
Me too. Let's go next to Florida, Jacksonville. Josh, you're with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, George.
Hi.
I guess I'm a first-time listener, first-time caller.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Got to say that I half agree to the idea of emotional control, because personally, I actually suffer from bipolar type 2.
Okay.
Which is basically any kind of trigger can set me into a depression. And that depression usually leads to anger.
Do you see a marked personality change, Josh, when that happens?
Oh, absolutely. I turned from a very fun-loving guy to just the worst type that you would want to deal with.
And you know you're doing this, right?
Oh, that's the worst part, is I don't.
You don't? Okay.
I essentially black out, but I've had to become essentially a master of my own emotions.
Yes, exactly.
I've had to monitor myself constantly, and by doing that, I'm able to handle situations like your example of the grocery store. If somebody cuts in front of me, I have to manage myself and realize that by getting angry, that's not going to solve anything, and that by using negative emotions and negativity, that's not going to solve anything. However, the only part that I would disagree is the letting go of certain things, the allowing the person to cut in front, whereas I would just essentially stand up and say, no, in a very calm way, of course, no, I'm next in line, and if you have a problem with that, you know, we should get a manager or some other authority in here, but this is my place, and I'm going to stand here. And all the meanwhile, the person can get as upset as they want. It is my responsibility to keep my cool.
Well, I think then that's the beautiful challenge for you. I mean, I really applaud you, you know, what you're doing. I really hear what you're saying, and I think it's amazing what you're doing. And if that's what feels right to you, then absolutely do it. You know, each person has to make up their own mind what to do in that line, but hopefully we're going to do something different than trying to kill each other in that line. You know, you see, it feels good to me to let people in. It's a secret thrill I get because they so don't expect it, and I love to surprise people, and it actually makes them feel good. And when you get people into their hearts, when they're not out to kill you or they don't see you as the enemy, you know, the other person standing in line, they see you as the enemy, like you're going to cut in front of them and steal their 2 minutes or something. But if you're able to keep your cool or give them a gift when they don't expect it, you know what happens is they start doing that for other people.
I cut in front of somebody at an ATM machine, and you know how you kind of like give them space. If somebody's at an ATM machine, you give them space because it's kind of private. They kind of think you're trying to steal your
right.
PIN number and stuff.
Definitely,
so you back off. Well, anyways, you know, so there was somebody, you know, wrapping up their business at an ATM, and I came in and just went right behind them, good distance, about 3 feet or so. And just as they left, I walked right up to the front. And some lady in the back said, excuse me, you cut in front of me. And I turned around and went, what? And she said, you cut in front of me. And I said, ma'am, you weren't even in line. I haven't even seen you. Apparently, she was back about 15 feet, fumbling through her purse to get her ATM card.
Yes.
And figured she was in line. And to me, when you get in line, you get in line, right? And I didn't even see her. Honest to God, Judith didn't even see her at all. But I backed out. I went, you know, I said, well, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't even see you. And then she calmed down. But man, she was getting tense.
Yes, they're all on the edge like that. Like something's going to be taken away from them.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that. I can totally relate to that feeling. I mean, living in L.A., it happens all the time. But, you know, what I am so passionate about, you know, as a psychiatrist and as an intuitive, is that we learn to work with energy in a bit more sophisticated, heart-centered way than what we're used to. And, you know, to give people a lot of leeway, because to shift energy, you have to give people something. And they have to feel something positive. And people aren't used to being loved. They're not used to being respected or given the benefit of the doubt. And when you're able to give that to someone, just try it and see what happens to the person.
I'll open a door for someone all the time. Even if they're about 15 feet behind me, I'll just kind of like wait and keep the door open for them. And they're in shock that somebody would do that for them. I mean, in shock, whether it's a guy or a woman, they don't understand this.
They don't, but you see, then they like it. And another thing that I do, and this is just a little thing, is when people don't have money, let's say they're waiting in the coffee line, I'll pay for their coffee. You know, instead of getting angry with them, why did you hold up the line when you don't have any money? You know, I'll just give them the money.
I have paid for some people who are in line at a store for something, and they run 50 cents short, a couple bucks short, doesn't matter. And I picked it up. I said, hey, don't worry about it. Because, you know, then they start rummaging through their stuff to take one thing down. And I said, no, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And, and they say, well, we'll never be able to repay you. And I said, do this for somebody else one day.
Exactly. But you see, this really works. If you want to change the world, then you have to be the first one to do it. And don't think that other people won't do it. This really touches their heart. They don't forget about it. It means something to them that someone was nice to them. As in our world, kindness is very rare, unfortunately. So if you're able to not just react to everything and think about, all right, let's use this situation to have a bigger goal. Because I believe unless somebody does it, it's not going to happen. So you start with the microcosm of the smaller things, the supermarket lines, the traffic, the bank lines. You know, you learn to shift it there, but just watch. I mean, I'm an observer of energy. I love observing human behavior and what shifts energy. It's very fascinating.
Well, I'm glad I helped them, or I maybe hear them as they walk away going, that cheapskate radio guy didn't help me at all. That's all I need. Let's squeeze another Jim in Columbia, South Carolina. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would volunteer for a show also. I could call it Average Jim from the middle.
My characters on this program.
I would like to suggest that the express lanes, that when we get in line and we have someone with an overflowing buggy ahead of us, I would really like to see them program those machines where they can only ring up 10 or 20 items, whatever the limit is.
And just stop.
And then the machine, you have to pay and make it where it's inconvenient for the people who have the full buggies.
That sometimes bugs me sometimes, if it says 20 items or less and somebody's in front of you with 60.
Well, they always, they always do that. And they always have, you know, a million people with them.
But the store, though, should school that. It shouldn't be, me or the guy behind them. It should be the store that says, excuse me, but. You know, this is for the express people. You're going to have to move over. That's why we have this. Anyways, Judith, keep in touch with me, okay?
I will. I've really enjoyed this, George.
Dr. Judith Orloff, her website, it's her name. It's hooked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We make it really easy for you. And do make coasttocoastam.com one of your favorites so you don't have to type it up all the time. And yes, as I got an email today from someone who said, how do you become a Coast Insider? It's on the website. It's up there. Just go way up to the top. You'll see a little there banner up there, and you can just click that. It's 25 cents a day. We'll be back.